Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Big delay there. Sorry, JD. That's all you. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. A little bit of talking over.
Guys, I got another nosebleed.
I know. What is going on with you? Get a humidifier.
I have one, and it's right beside my bed, and it clearly isn't working because I got another nosebleed.
Do you
and I
know how to use it?
Yes, I know how to use it.
Fill it with water, turn it on.
That's not that difficult. Yeah, I got it.
I don't know.
It's still not doing it.
Do you?
The dry air in this condo. Yeah. Ooh, baby.
Look, is it?
There was a day this week were both wearing glasses. Ailish is having bloody noses. I don't think I'm the nerd on this show. I know we frame it like that.
I was having a bloody nose, a nerd. I'm tough. I got in a fight.
That's pretty nerdy. You look pretty nerdy right now.
You had a bloody nose sitting still. You didn't get in a fight. You had multiple bloody noses just sitting there.
With the Amazon guy that dropped off my package. I just got him during the break.
Yeah. Glasses, bloody noses, pocket protectors. You guys are the nerds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, listen. Yeah, it's true. I will admit that, like, our stock of not being the nerds versus nerd stock, it's leveled out a little bit. You know, but that's the pandemic for you. It's just, it's kind of all over the map with stocks right now. I can't get over Ailish, just the stuffed Kleenex in the nose. It's so, like, yeah. I love that Ailish is also, like, pulling her hair back right now, being like, do I look pretty?
Keep an eye on Ailish's Instagram stories at Ailish Forfar, because she's absolutely spending this entire segment and the next break trying to get a good photo of her with tissue stuffed up her nose.
Tried
last time when it happened in the studio. I tried to do it.
I actually got a great picture of Ailish with the tissue stuffed up her nose the first time when we were in studio that this happened. But the difference is like, I didn't notice the blood this time. You had to show like a little dab of it, whereas
bleeding.
When we were in studio that one time.
Oh, it was pouring out that time. It was alarming. Like, it's like, it was crazy. I had to actually run out of the room.
Know.
This time around, it was more like, oh, it's going to start bleeding.
Blake, did you see Ailish, the one in studio? Like, did you notice it? Because she just looked at me, and she gave me, like, a look of fear, and then her nose just, like, popped, and it just like, flooded everywhere. It was as though a witch had just cursed her on the spot. It was amazing. So, yeah. All
yeah,
right,
I remember. Ailish, it looked like she was doing a bit, because, like, she was, like, trying to get our attention to, like, set up that her nose was bleeding.
Yes. Oh, so good. So unbelievably good. So again, we have Ariel Helwani coming up in about 20 minutes. I do want to get to some of Blake and I's picks for this weekend's UFC in this block before we bring in Ariel, because maybe we can just end up asking him sort of off of our confidence with these picks, how he's feeling. But I do want to start again with the Leafs, and I just want to touch back onto this, because I didn't even realize that the Islanders were in a second half of a back-to-back. And so now, given all of that, the Leafs being a team that is pretty well rested, honest to God. Like, they're playing their second game in, what, a week? When they play the Islanders? The Islanders are playing a back-to-back inferior team. Are we kind of reevaluating what I said earlier, which is, quote-unquote, how the Leafs respond to Sheldon Keefe? Like, there's nothing they can do that's a positive, that this is only sort of a negative from a media standpoint, where it really doesn't feel like anything they do is going to be spun in, wow, way to go, because of the parameters. But if they do lose this game somehow, oh my God, it actually is going to be a DEFCON level up.
You could go either way with it, I think. You could go the direction of, hey, it's a DEFCON level thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see some people playing they haven't been playing much, the rusty card, or it's the sixth game of a road trip. Look, this team has played seven games since December 14th. If you don't have enough juice to go full bore, and especially coming off of three losses in your last five, like, this should be an opportunity where, look, you should have a couple things in mind. You should have the Keefe comments in mind. You should have the fact that, you know, the last couple games and really the last couple weeks, you haven't been there for your goalies in the same way that you were early in the season. Maybe you want to pick them up. You know, there's also an element of, like, the Islanders are good eating. You should be fired up for games like this where you can, like, I know that their issue is entirely that they can't score and it's not as much on the other side of the ice, but you should still be kind of licking your lips at this thing. And you know, Sorokin and Varlamov have been a good duo, but you should, like, dominate the possession in this game. You should have lots of opportunities. So there are any number of ways to chew this up where the Leafs should come out fired up. in this one, and there's not really any sort of excuse. Like, yeah, their defense is thinned out. You know who else's defense is thinned out? The team that doesn't have good defensemen.
And then there's always the fact that there's the Tavares Islanders connection, and he should always be playing up a little bit more because of that. And there's always that little extra pressure. And, you know, I know they're on the road and he's back in that barn. I think it just bodes well to get a huge win as a, like a character win almost, that they can get back in there, get back in the win column, do it for their captain, put kind of a big end to this narrative that's been going on about losing leads and playing a full 60 minutes. Like, those are just the things that you need to check off the boxes in this game. And it's a big Tavares game, a full 60 minute domination. You beat a pretty crappy team and your goaltending plays well. Like, if you can get all four of those things, we're going to be happy Monday. If there's a big hole missing, or even if they get a squeaker win and some of those things didn't get resolved, I still think that the Toronto, I don't know, atmosphere, the media, the fans, they're a little bit hesitant to be like, things are healed, things are fixed.
So are you guys surprised that as of today, they're, and maybe this will end up cropping up tomorrow a little bit more, or if the Leafs end up losing this game or whatever, but just given where the Islanders are in the standings right now, and given where the Leafs are and how people feel just about the process of this team and the offseason that Dubas had, where are you guys at just kind of with the Lou versus Dubas thing? Because that has always been a big point of contention for Maple Leafs fans. It was huge last year when the Islanders yet again went into the playoffs and won, whereas the Leafs again got bounced in the first round. Their rosters are going head-to-head right now. And yes, the Islanders have had a bit of a season from hell when it comes to injuries. But do you think that there has been any sort of a shift? Because Dubas is clearly still not in the win column here. They've had playoff matchups where Lou has won. He's picked coach of the year, all these different things. But do you think that Dubas has moved closer to people believing that that was the right choice?
Yeah, I think when you look at some of the acquisitions just in this last offseason with Bunting, Kasha, and Kampf, just those three alone give him that bit of an edge, I think. I haven't thought about Lou basically all year, you know, because we look at what the Islanders are doing. We look at that conversation. I think it's quieted down. But last year was a different story with the Islanders being someone that made the playoffs again. And we were like, oh, they're feisty. They have a good style of hockey. Like, there were a lot of things that I liked about their style that I thought, the Leafs should replicate or should look into this. Obviously, I think that it's been a pretty crappy season for them in terms of injuries and just, you know, they're just not performing at the bottom of the Metropolitan, which is, you know, not the hardest division, I don't think, whatsoever. So I look at that and I look at what Dubas did this offseason, and, you know, just those three players I named alone, I think, give him a little bit of an edge in this conversation. But once again, it's going to kind of look down on how this game goes too. There's that whole narrative that I didn't even think about going into it. I don't think you can completely rewrite the story if the Islanders beat the Leafs, but you think about, wow, you know, how far ahead are we really at this point?
I don't have a strong take here. I'm like, the Lou success with the Islanders that quickly, you know, some of that is what's held over there. Some of it was also a little bit of, you know, the Islanders probably overperformed in the playoffs a little bit relative to where they are at least 2 years ago, if not last season. And then the other element here is, you know, you wonder what the long term looks like here. And I know Barzal and Beauvillet and a couple of the defensemen are on the younger age, but the younger side of things. But right now they have one defenseman making over $1.4 million and they're all free agents except for Scott Mayfield. So that things are about to get expensive there. And they, despite being
maybe
really
the Leafs
good
can
goal,
trade for some of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And despite being like a good goals against team, maybe this is a system element. Maybe that's part of it, but they allow a lot of shot attempts at 5-on-5. So I'm not sure. Like, I think there could be some regression there. I don't know. The Islanders are in an okay spot, I guess. But if I'm the Leafs and I'm someone who comes at hockey in this show from a very Leafs perspective, what the Islanders are doing is not super relevant to me, other than are they losing on Saturday night?
Yeah. I look at it differently as somebody that cares about this team historically and where they've ended up. And to me, the biggest thing is not so much about, hey, how I feel about the Islanders right now, the talent they have versus what the Leafs do. But the thing is like they just had an offseason where Adam Pellick, like, he signed an incredibly friendly team contract. You have seen this now sort of over and over with the Islanders where they nailed down some pretty lovely contracts despite even having things that looked like they were going to get contentious, like Matthew Barzal. He was someone that was a lot of people around hockey went, he's going to get traded and he's going to want more money and he's going to want this and he's going to want that. Guess what? He got $7 million and he's still an RFA in 23-24. And guess who I expect to win that contract negotiation? Lou Lamoriello. So to me, it's still a pretty relevant conversation. And it's actually one of them that it doesn't move the needle for me whatsoever when it comes to Duvis versus Lou right now, because Lou's team got beat up this year. Lou's team was never supposed to be a regular season team. It was always supposed to be about the playoffs. And Lou's team is still the one that's going to be able to be more flexible moving forward because of some of those contracts, Blake. And if you're telling me that all those guys are going to be unrestricted free agents, they know the deal. If they want to stay a part of that, they're going to have to take less money. And the guys who don't are going to end up kicking rocks, and they're going to have to go somewhere else, and the other organization is going to have to overpay them. Like, I just don't believe Lou is going to end up overpaying for players. And that is what I really like.
And a couple of them are RFA, too. And I think it's a really fascinating look at different ways to spend in a cap environment, right, where the Islanders don't have quote-unquote core four making up a ton of the cap. They have a more stratified, like, hey, our top liners make $7 million. Our second liners make $5 million. Our third liners make $2.5 to $3 million. Our fourth liners are bottom, are like $1 million and under. And then, you know, the big question is whether they can still – build that defense. Like, they're paying $11 million for their defense core this year. And again, five of those guys, three are RFA, so you like your chances to re-sign them cheap. But that'll be the challenge, is can this strategy continue as your guys get more expensive or age out of ELCs? Or in the case of, like, a Josh Bailey, even, you know, if he has to move down the lineup at some point as he gets into his mid-30s. But, yeah, I think it's a really fascinating look at two different ways to approach the cap and approach team building.
So I want to pivot, by the way, quickly before we get to Ariel here, because we have a longer we're coming up on Ariel in about 15 minutes, a little less. Blake, it's a huge UFC card this weekend. You and I both talked about how narratively there is a massive story brewing with Francis Ngannou. I gave my best bet for the UFC this weekend, Michelle Pereira minus one, depending on where you get the books, but like it's all over the map, but you can find it at small plus numbers or short minuses. So should be basically around even money for a bet for Michelle Pereira to win by a finish. But the main events, the co-mains, I kind of see value on the underdogs here, and I wonder if you feel the same way. This is one where I just think both of them are very close, and I feel like I'm going to end up with the Blake Murphy middling where I hit one of these two dogs, and that's going to be the frustrating part of it rather than hitting both. But as much as I love Brandon Moreno, and I feel like it's going to be hard for me to bet against him because I'm such a fan of his that I think I'm going to bet him because I want him to win, I look at that line and say it feels as though, one, we're kind of writing off Devson, and we're sort of ending him a little early when we were, you know, not too long ago talking about this guy being one of the best pound-for-pound dudes in the UFC. And secondarily, like, I don't know. I just kind of think that if you can get plus 140 and better for Francis to knock somebody out in a heavyweight fight that he's sparred with and that he has claimed that he has knocked down in the past, that you should take Francis Ngannou and knock that guy out. Like, I don't know. This feels like pretty kind of straight. This feels strange to me. I like both those guys, both the dogs.
So I especially like it in the heavyweight title fight. That's just, it's such a, like, a heavyweight title fight is also always a good spot to play knockout props. You know, pick your round or whatever. This is going to be a slugfest. I think with two guys who hit this hard and are this good, if you're getting value on one side versus the other, especially with a line swing like this, I've seen some suggestions from people like Daniel Cormier that maybe the contract situation and the beef with the UFC is in Ngannou's head a little bit, and maybe that's a distraction factor. I think that talking point maybe is preemptively taking something away from Cyril, where, like, if Cyril wins, it's because he's really good and deserves it. But I do think, yeah, two guys that hit this hard and are both willing to stand up, if you're getting the champ at plus money, I like the plus money there, and I'll probably play it out on round props. I haven't decided where exactly yet.
Francis, but you'll second round KO is what I'm playing.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's plus 800 versus mm-hmm. just plus 125 outright, or mm-hmm. plus 160 by stoppage. So there's definitely, I mean, obviously you're opening yourself up to a lot more randomness picking a specific round.
No, I'm playing both.
Yeah, of course. The other one, I'm not as confident. I do think there's an element of, like, hey, you guys fought to a draw, and then Mourinho was pretty dominant in that third one.
Yep.
In the third round of that second fight. Mm-hmm. And it's probably hard to do that to a guy three times in a row. But then I look back, and Davison won. I mean, he would have won the first fight had it not been for the point deduction. Mm-hmm. So maybe these guys are a little more even than minus 175 suggests. I still think I lean Mourinho, but I'm not. I definitely see the draw in two guys this close going the underdog side. I just think
I saw enough
from the champ in their last fight to go that way. But it's, yeah, once you get into the props and stuff, you're looking at value plays. You're not looking at just the straight up winner.
That's right. That's what I'm trying to kind of make the case here for, is that mm-hmm. I think both these fights are even. And so when both these fights are even, I'm going to go, or closer to even, let's just say. I don't think that it's a dead heat, because you're right, I agree, that Mourinho is there. But at minus 175, I think that that's kind of crappy value in this fight. Like, I just don't view that as, like, what are you doing with that? You're not really betting that straight up, and you're not really feeling confident enough to throw it in a parlay. And that's what I'm looking at this through, is the lens of sports betting, right? I think that that Mourinho is the better fighter. I think that there's probably something to this Cyril line that's a little scary, because Francis is obviously the public face. And so getting him at that number sort of tells me that there's some information that has been leaked out of their sparring that people think that maybe Francis can't handle his wrestling, or there's something that Cyril does much better than Francis. Like, that this could be surprising. Do you remember the first time Francis fought Stipe, and Stipe just, you know, took him down over and over and over again, and he gassed him out? There's a bit of, I'm not worried about the mental edge thing. To me, that's not the one. To me, the thing that scares me about that fight is what I just outlined. Somebody somewhere knows something that the public doesn't know, and that secret has gotten out, and the line has swung because heavy fight bettors have gotten that intel. And that's sort of what I want to ask Ariel next. So let's take a break, and let's ask the man himself, Ariel Helwani, the nose. He joins us next. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. And now, one of our favorites, one of my personal favorites, one of the best in the business, all things, Ariel Helwani, MMA journalist, host of the MMA Hour, you know, analyst for BT Sports. I don't even want to read all the things. There's just too many things. Ariel, what's up, man? How you doing?
You say one of your favorites, yet you guys never call. You never have me on. It's always a last-minute thing. You always have these other jabroni, you know, guys on. I mean, it's like you don't even want the ratings. You don't want the downloads. You don't want the notoriety. Yeah. You say best in the business. Which business? Are we talking, like, media business, period? Are we talking, like,
I take it all back.
Society? Okay, so I was just curious. I see you in there in the comments, JD, talking smack about the fights and whatnot on MMA fighting. I see you. I choose not to engage, but rest assured, I see you.
Well, you know, you know what the problem is, Ariel. It's that.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, man. The problem is that.
How are you, Blake?
It's one. I'm wonderful, man. I just want to explain JD's thought process to you about not bringing you on as much, bringing you on short notice. Is the ratings are good, and you obviously pop a big number for us in the key demos. But
thank you.
It then creates this contrast of, hey, why aren't the ratings that high all the time? You're actually too big
That's
a draw,
right.
Ariel, is the issue.
Okay, I understand. By the way, you must be an old-time pro wrestling fan, because you're using, like, words like pop and key down. Like, I just feel this feels very 1999 Monday Night Raw-ish, so I respect that. I feel like we've completely lost the third member of the team here, but that's okay.
Yeah, you know what? I just like to hide in the weeds and let JD get his shots out, And then I find my
shots. They always invite me on when you're not on the show.
I call him the best in the business.
You know, last time I wasn't on the show, I was out and about enjoying my life, taking some time off from these two jabronis. So I'm glad to be a part of this.
I like jabronis. That's a good word. I was taking it personally. I don't know if it was something, but
no,
I think
no,
you're
no.
a Bills fan as well. Am I wrong or am I right?
I am.
Let's go.
I can't wait.
Let's go, Buffalo.
I love it.
Sorry, it's a big weekend ahead.
No, this is it. This is the setup. So it's like, I love how that you showed up like somebody who's from a country and you heard Blake's accent and you're like, oh, I know what part of Scotland you're from with his wrestling stuff. Like you both as wrestling fans, you picked up on the dialect immediately. Yeah. And Ailish, you're correct, is like your Bills fan. So here, that's the thing is that, you know, you are heel-wanny with me and that's fine. You know, our friendship is a strained one. But here, like you can bond with Blake over wrestling. But yes, this is the introduction to you being friends with Ailish. It's like, how are you guys feeling about your Bills? Ailish is very, very confident.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm happy she's confident. And yes, that's what a good guest does. He does his research on who he's speaking to. I already know about you, JD, Jabroni Central, so I don't have to do my research, but I like to, you know who the other people are. And, oh, by the way, I listen to the podcast, as I've told you, in our private conversation. Now, I am very confident slash nervous. I should also say I'm just perpetually nervous. I'm a 24/7 anxious Jew. Everything makes me nervous. And, you know, my Bills and my Knicks especially make me nervous because I have been programmed to be anxious and nervous and expect the worst when it comes to them. However, for the first time since the early 90s, when there was a guy named Jim Kelly running the show in Orchard Park, I feel a sense of confidence like that's our guy. That's our leader. We have the best football player on the field. And I still can't get over what he did last Saturday night at Orchard Park in Western New York, Buffalo, frigid temperatures. Everyone's talking about, you know, oh, he's not used to this. He can't play in the cold weather. One of the all-time great performances I've ever seen in humanity. Forget about sports. This man, in case you didn't hear, had more touchdowns than incompletions. This man did not have one fourth down, not a single punt. The longest third down was third and four. It was the closest thing that we've seen to Don Larson's perfect game in the 1951 World Series, okay? Or maybe it was 57, I can't remember. I was just 3 years old at the time. The point is, I believe in Josh Allen. I believe that he is going to exorcise the demons, and the Buffalo Bills are on this amazing revenge tour. It starts with exorcising the demons that were the New England Patriots. Ding dong, the witches are dead. We'll then go and exercise the demons of last year's AFC Championship game against the Chiefs. We'll slay that dragon. Then, hey, Tennessee, bring it on, baby. Music City Miracle, we'll exercise those demons. And then we'll waltz into SoFi in mid-February and finally slay the dragon that is Tommy Boy. And then finally Bills fans can die in peace. It's going to be the most beautiful scene that I have ever witnessed.
Oh, and then you can sitting here, like, ready to jump
Knicks
through a table.
After that. You got to do your Knicks fandom. After you get rid of all these Bills demons exercise, you got to pivot to the Knicks. 1956, by the way, for Don Larson's perfect game.
Yeah, close enough. I mean, that's off the top of my head there, Blake. I mean, can I get some credit?
Absolutely. It's great. You were 1 year off something that happened a million years ago. Speaking of that, where are you on your city of Montreal potentially getting half a baseball team back?
Oh, God. I mean, this is a typical Toronto sports media move. Here I am feeling good. My Bills are, you know, about to beat the Chiefs primetime Sunday, and you have to bring up the sore subject. Listen, I never believed in this. I never did. My good friend, my close personal friend, Stephen Brunt, was trying to tell me that this was going to happen. I just didn't believe which players association under the sun would agree to such a deal. I spoke to Blake Snell of your San Diego Padres for my own personal podcast, the Ariel Hawaiian Show. You can check it out now. Fantastic gentleman. And he used to play for the Rays. I was like, what do you guys think of this? You know, like what you guys were, you know, he was on the team two seasons ago. This was in talks. I was like, no one wanted this. No one would ever agree to this. Who would want to play not only half the season in one city, half the season in the other, half the season in one country, half the season in the other? I always felt like we were being used. Montreal was being used. I know Stu Sternberg likes to say that, oh, he's devastated, this, that, and the other. I think Montreal was trying their hardest. They saw an opportunity. But let's be honest. Montreal, La Belle Province, we deserve our own baseball team. We're a better baseball town than any other town, any other city in Canada.
No,
we deserve it. There's a richer history of baseball in Montreal than in Toronto. We could talk about the Laurier Downs. What do you know about the Montreal Royals and Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanella and Tommy Lasorda? You know nothing about those guys. Okay, the AAA affiliate of the Brooklyn Dodgers. We have a rich history.
Believe
we were screwed over by the strike. We were screwed over by that albatross of a stadium, the Olympic Stadium. One day, Montreal will get its baseball team back. We don't want someone scrapped, okay? We're getting our own team.
No, you won't. No, you won't. No, you won't.
Yes, we will.
You never will, and
by
nobody
the way,
cares.
We're going to steal Vladdy Jr., who you guys don't appreciate from your team. Whenever we come, we're going to take out Montreal's own out of Atlanta as well.
Nah, here's the thing. It's a second-rate Canadian
team. You
didn't
appreciate
him either.
You ran
Canadian
him out of town.
Yeah. They're also going to take Canada's best sports journalist to cover the Expos as well. I assume Stephen Brunt will be retired by then, so it'll be me. I'm going to leave the Raptors side and go do the Expos for Ariel so he has the coverage that city and that team deserves.
No. Again, you guys just like, it's fantasy camp. It's your wrestling thing. It's all fictional. That's the thing. You guys, too much wrestling brain. You guys think you can just make up stories and that they'll come to fruition. It's like, this isn't, what do you call them, Blake? The grime notes? What is it? The crib notes? The things that are
dirt
the story
sheets.
For wrestling. Dirt
oh,
sheets.
Well,
that's
I don't,
the one.
No,
grime
dirt
notes is better,
thing.
By the way.
No, dirt sheets is a different thing. I don't, it's just the script is the script.
Okay. All right, so let me turn this into the script. Ariel, what happens if Francis wins and he refuses to fight and he becomes one of the faces of the UFC? Like, he already is, but this whole championship clause and the guy saying that he's not going to fight for 500 or 600 grand, Dana's already taken shots at him saying that he surrounds himself with people that are, like, you know, not the sharpest of minds, I think is the terminology he used. And now you have someone who, you know, might be the biggest draw for the UFC. If he can just have a clean knockout of Sirigane, like if that ends up happening here, this is probably going to push him into a bit of a different level. I know I get overly optimistic at times with, you know, what can actually happen with fighters putting pressure on the UFC after countless times where non-Conor McGregor figures have gone to that table and lost. But what is the story if he wins?
Oh, my. I mean, we could talk about this for 2 hours. It's fascinating drama, unlike we've ever seen in the UFC because of this. First of all, you just look at the fight itself, and it's a shame that it's going up against, I think it's the Packers game. They should have done it next weekend when there were no games on Saturday night, but, you know, that's their problem. It's the heavyweight title, right? And anytime you talk about the heavyweight title, whether it's boxing, whether it's MMA, that just gets people excited. You think of Mike Tyson and all those names. And oh, by the way, Francis Ngannou, in my opinion, is the closest thing that the UFC has ever had to Mike Tyson. One punch, knockout power as the heavyweight champion. Oh, by the way, tremendous backstory. Comes from Cameroon with nothing. He's sleeping in a parking lot in Paris. Some guy says, come in my gym. I'm going to turn you into a monster. Turns him into a monster. He looks like a monster. He looks like a Marvel superhero. Tremendous guy. Like, he's a promoter's dream. And so what happens, he's training with this coach, Fernan Lopez, in Paris. They have a falling out. He moves to Las Vegas. Fernan Lopez says, I'm going to turn someone else into a monster. That monster is Ciryl Gane. And so now you have this situation where the guy who created Frankenstein is creating another Frankenstein to go up and kill the Frankenstein that he created, Francis Ngannou. And so that in itself is straight out of WWE, right? The two former training partners, somewhat friends, now going up against each other for the heavyweight title. That's tremendous. Unification bout, heavyweight title, you can't script it any better. Oh, by the way, there's this whole contract issue now, and this gets me excited, so excited that my voice even cracks when I say it, okay? That's how excited I get about this thing. And by the way, the UFC should be thanking us for talking about this because I think we've added a whole new level of intrigue to this fight. So Francis Ngannou signed an 8-fight deal 4.5 years ago. That deal expires December 31st, 2022. This is the 8th fight on that deal. They have tried repeatedly to get him to sign a new contract. He doesn't like what they're offering. So he says, hey, I'm going to bet on it myself. I'm going to go into this fight, my title defense, on the last fight of my deal. This has never happened before. No UFC champion has ever gone into a title defense with no fights left on his deal. And so that's big in its own right. If he loses on Saturday, he can walk away a free agent. If he wins on Saturday, he has to stick around till December 31st of 2022. Now, he's saying, I'm not going to take another fight. There's a champion's clause that makes him stick around until the end of the term of the deal. However, you know, the UFC is going to tell him, like, yo, you got to fight, you got to defend, or we'll strip you. It could get messy. The point is, if he wins this fight on Saturday, he'll have all the leverage in the world, right? The UFC will have to try to re-sign him. He just beat the Golden Boy, who's undefeated. It's just, I mean, like, again, Dana said it himself, Vince couldn't script it. You really couldn't. From the standpoint of the coaches, the former training partner, he leaves, he looks like a freaking superhero, and now the contract stuff, I can assure you, they'll never admit it, but they want Cyril Gane to win. Francis brings a huge headache to the table. They don't want to deal with that. And it's a shame because, as you just said, he could be one of the biggest stars in the sport. It's a true shame that they haven't been able to see eye to eye. But, hey, if he wins, you know, money talks. They can come to the table and figure this out. And they should be able to figure it out because, like I said, closest thing they've ever had to Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I agree with everything, man.
And I lose just... you guys? Is that it? Is that you have nothing to say to that? I just sold that pay-per-view better than Dana White could ever do on his best day. They should be giving me a cut of the pay-per-views at this point. I'm getting more people excited about
kind
this card. They're not even doing anything to promote it. Yeah.
You said the reason why they're not promoting it, though, right? Like, they're up against this Packers game. I don't know why they put Mourinho here. Like, it just – the card itself underneath it is kind of weak. Like, it's just not – it's just the main event, like, honestly. And I'm sorry, but, like, Mourinho, I like him. I think he's a great story. But this fight, it's the third time I'm seeing it. I don't know. I kind of feel like we found out what this fight is the last time we saw it. I wasn't clamoring for a third version of it, but whatever. I'll watch it. I love the UFC. You know I'm going to watch this. But it's just, it's not the greatest card, and it does feel a little bit buried. And I believe you when you say that they want Cyril to win. I 100% agree. They don't want that headache. They don't want that press. They don't want it in the light of what has happened with all this Jake Paul stuff where you're going, oh, man, this guy's putting all this emphasis on fighter pay and how we treat our fighters, and then we're going to put Francis in this spot out of all this. Like, Jake Paul's going to have a field day for 6 months if this result happens, if Francis knocks him out.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm kind of curious about, though, is the line, right? The line is now Cyril as a favorite, and I'm wondering if that's a result of – because Francis is the known commodity here, and normally betting lines reflect the public and the way the public is betting or the way that books need to hedge it. And I'm wondering if this is a case of people know something that we don't know about the way these two match up, or if there have been birdies that have been talking about – actually, when these two used to spar or when these two were in the gym together, Cyril was actually the guy, not Francis. Like, that betting line is curious to me. It's very suspicious. It tells me that the UFC might get the result they want.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I should also note that since UFC 74, the favorite in the heavyweight title fight is just 10-10. So there haven't been a ton of heavyweight title fights. As you know, it's pretty much just, you know, one a year, but I'm not putting too much stock into that. And you're right, there has been some footage leaked by Cyril's team, by the way, of him getting the better of Francis. Francis has come back and said, I knocked you out. Back and forth they're going, yada, yada, yada. I think the reason why people are high on Cyril is, A, he's undefeated. He's a tremendous athlete. I retweeted a clip yesterday, and there's a ton out there. But, like, this dude is actually an incredible basketball player, and you don't expect that from a big heavyweight guy, right? His skills are amazing. He's huge, but he is very, very good on the court, which is not a common thing. I don't know if you've ever seen John Jones shoot a basketball or try to dunk. It's quite embarrassing, and we know how good of a fighter he is. So people are high on Cyril. He looked great in his last fight. He has better cardio. And I think because he has Fernan Lopez, his head coach, literally the guy who built Francis into who he is today, there's a lot of people who think, well, this guy obviously probably knows his weaknesses, right? I mean, if he built him, he knows how to demolish him as well. So I think all those reasons combined, and historically, when someone challenges the UFC, the house always seems to win. The UFC always seems to win in these situations. Anytime someone tries to challenge them, you know, play this game of chicken with them, try to bet on themselves, they always somehow win. Even when they let guys go, as you know, historically, they're like, yeah, you know, we're not going to extend your contract. Hey, Rory McDonald, good luck to you. What happens? They fall off the face of the earth, essentially. You know, they're just unable to prove the UFC wrong. And so I think all those things combined, that being said, I'm not counting out Francis. In fact, I would urge everyone listening right now, do a little parlay for me. Do a little Francis, do a little Buffalo Bills, slap them together, two dogs who may shock the world come Sunday night. Together. There will be one on Saturday, one on Sunday, of course.
I like it. We do this thing sometimes called the Homer's Parlay, where you hit the Leafs and the Raptors on the same night. And we've occasionally talked about throwing the Bills in. Look, Francis being from Cameroon look, Pascal Siakam's from Cameroon. There's the whole Giants of Africa angle.
Oh.
We can spin yes. Francis as a hometown favorite as well, make it a giant Homer's Parlay. Ariel, I want to ask you about the other title fight, Mourinho, Figueiredo. I know that Figueiredo technically would have won that first fight if it wasn't for the deducted point. I thought the second fight was pretty decisive. What are you looking for here? Does Mourinho have anything to prove in this one, or is this just kind of closing the book on a trilogy because they can?
Well, I actually disagree with our friend JD. I agree with the sentiment that it's a weak card, but I think the top two fights are phenomenal. They're worth the $75 that they're charging us here in the United States to watch it. Brandon Moreno, great story, right? This guy got cut from the UFC, works his way back up, and re-enters the organization and wins the title, first Mexican-born champion in UFC history. And their first fight back in December of 2020 was my second-best fight of the year behind Joanny Jędrzejczyk and Zhang Weili. It was incredible. It ended in a draw, as you said. So they run it back in June. And the big thing was, all right, you know, Figueiredo's on a roll at this point. He's knocking out Joseph Benavidez, all this stuff. And he shows up to the weigh-ins with 1 minute left, because they get a two-hour window to weigh in on Friday morning. 1 minute left. Completely dehydrated, looks like hell, and then everyone's like, uh-oh, he's in trouble, and guess what? He was in trouble. He didn't look good in the fight. He gets submitted and loses the belt. So now they're running it back for a third time, and that's a byproduct, honestly, of a thin flyweight division, but also this is a great story, and yeah. It's the fight that everyone wanted to see, okay? And so, cheap plug, 12 p.m. Eastern, we have the weigh-ins, right? And cheap plug, I'll be on Spotify Green Room if you want to listen live. We take calls. I urge you all to join us, and I'll take your calls, and I'll play host for that. We'll be watching the weigh-ins together, and we shall find out how Figueiredo looks. He looks good in the pictures that he's posting, but how does he look on the scale? And so, this is legitimate news, right? This is when you can tell if the guy, the heavyweights doesn't really matter. Of course, they're 265, but these dudes, 125, I want to see how they look. So if he looks good, all right, now he's the underdog, by the way, going into this fight. Let's see what that translates into. So I think there's a lot of intrigue in this fight. Was that win for Moreno more, a product of Figueiredo looking bad, or is it just Moreno's much better than him? Can Figueiredo right the wrong and look good on the scale and then win the belt back on Saturday night? And then do they fight for a fourth time? JD's yeah. nightmare? I don't know, but I'm interested. I am interested, and I'm most yeah. interested in today how he looks on the scale.
Yeah, that's the part of this that I go, okay, the result, right? What ends up happening if we get the Mourinho win, which I think we're going to, because I just think that Mourinho's in his head. I think he got in his head in that first fight, and he's never left. That Devson just, he thought he was this untouchable champion, and we've seen this in all professional sports, but this happens in fighting sometimes, is you just have a guy who takes away that self-belief, and that's what I've seen ever since Mourinho didn't go away in that first fight. When he's just stuck with it, and he kept kind of just coming forward and kept coming forward and kept coming forward and kept coming back, that he's his boogeyman. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's not the way that it goes. Maybe Devson comes back and he shows up great on the scale. He shows up great in the fight. But that's the other part of it. I go, okay, so what? I'm just going to watch this fight for the rest of my life? Like, it's just these two going, swapping the belt back
There's
and forth?
Well, yeah, but you said it. The rest,
who?
There's don't be such a negative Nancy. Okay, there's a guy named Kaikar France who had two great finishes in 2021 Askarov. Who just finished Cody Askarov. There's Alexandre
Pantoja. Did you say Cody?
And also,
did you say Cody?
Yeah. He knocked out Cody. That's a big win. Yeah.
No. Oh, he knocked out Cody. I thought you were saying Cody as in Cody's that's down there that's interesting. Cody's
France.
Dead.
Kaikar France, who's teammates with Israel Adesanya. Yeah. And then there's a guy, remember this name. You guys will all talk about him probably in a year, 2 years. There's a guy named Mohamed Mohaev, and he is 21. He's from Dagestan. He now lives in Manchester. He's 125. He's going to debut March 19th. He is a freaking beast, this guy. And so a lot of people think he might even beat John Jones's record of youngest UFC champion, 23 years old, in 2 years or so. That's a name. So 125 is fine. It's obviously not, the talent rich divisions that we have like at 185 or 170, 155, of course, but it's fine. It's fine. Don't we, stop being so negative all the time, all right? Stop, you know, it's good to sometimes, I know it's cold over there. You guys can't plow snow. There's a lot of snow. I get it. Times are tough. I understand. But
we can't plow snow.
Look on the bright side. Yeah.
I am looking on the bright side. The bright side is that, you know what? You've ruined the Bills for me, you know? Like, now I'm
Why?
Already thrilled that
you're rooting for the Chiefs?
Yeah, now I am. I wasn't before, but ever since you came on and did this, like I was like, yeah, you know what? It's a little bit too much. You know, you got a little too, you know, high on the hog here. You forgot your roots, which is being a Bills fans, you're starting to slap them into parlays. You know, it's not only that the Bills will win, it's that other picks will win. I'm like, you did the Montreal. Once you said you're going to steal Vladdy from us, and once you started talking about how Montreal is this beautiful baseball city when, like, they couldn't even get 45 people to go to these games, I'm like, nah, that's it. Go check. Chiefs, go Mahomes. Stick it to Ariel. Let's go.
No, stop it. By the way, Patrick Mahomes Sr., former Montreal Expo reliever for one spring training back in 2004. I was there in Melbourne, Florida. Yeah. We could talk about that. And so I have love for young Patrick. But we all know that Toronto loves the Bills. Everyone in Toronto loves the Bills. Ontario loves the Bills. And like the great Coach McDermott loves to say, humble and hungry. Bills fans, we're just humble and hungry. And as the great former coach of the Montreal Alouettes once said, the one and only Marv Levy, when it's too tough for them, it's just right for us. And this Bills team is programmed to win this. And all we want is just one, right? We just want one. All we want is one. I don't want a dynasty. I don't want to go back-to-back. I don't want any of that. I just want to know what it feels like to see my team hoist that trophy in February just once. And by the way, I have breaking news. You guys want me to break news on the show right now? I have breaking news
Absolutely.
That just came through.
Wow. Yeah, what is it?
Breaking news exclusive to this program, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Do we have a jingle? Do we have something? Do you guys want to play something? Like a dun-dun-dun-dun, something? You got something?
You just
breaking
did it.
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Well? You just did it. Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Okay.
Ariel's. Vic, clip
just
Ariel
got it.
Doing
just
dun-dun-dun-dun.
My phone.
Yeah, okay. What do you got?
This is the breaking news. I just got followed on Twitter by Blake and Ailish. How about that?
That's Yay!
Both of them at the same time?
Yikes.
Same time. I just got it. I just got the two. Same time. I mean,
look at
big.
Us go.
Wow. That's
big.
A big moment.
It's bigger for Blake because Blake
I'm
has
sorry
a bigger
to interrupt, but it makes me think that you guys weren't like listening to me and you were just kind of scrolling, or maybe you were listening to me and you're like, you know what? I like this guy. I want more of this guy. I'm going to follow him as he's talking to me on the show.
I thought I already followed you. I've been reading and watching your work for forever.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. So I was No, I saw the tweet come out of our show lineup, and I was like, what the heck? I'm not.
See, Ariel? Like, this is what you should just remember is, like, you suck up to all these people who don't even care about you. You waste your time on all these people who don't even know who you are. And I've been your friend from the beginning, day one. And you come on and you kick me in the chest and you spit in my face. Like, that's, you know, like, that's how
Someone's
this
Someone's
got to
do
you know?
It. Someone's got to do it.
yeah, so, again, what time is the Spotify today? Because we'll be listening. I love those green rooms that you do. Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate it. I didn't even know you knew what that was. Thank you so much. That's 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. for my good friends overseas, 5 p.m. GMT. It's a great program because there's fans that could call in. I know you guys are not big on the callers. I like to interact with the people, with the fans, and we watch the Wayans together. We answer questions. We make picks. It's one of the all-time great programs, so please do check it out. Yeah. What's going on at 12 o'clock on the network? It's the Jeff Marek show? I mean, I love Jeff, but, you know.
Yeah.
A little variety.
You can listen to both. You can have both. You can listen to the Merrick podcast later, and you can listen
to
Ariel live. And listen, we already said it. Like, Ariel's going to tell you how Devson looks on the scale, and maybe that's going to influence your bet.
Yes.
So we have a lot of people on the show that like to listen to the betting, and Ariel's going to tell you basically how you're going to bet that fight if he says that Devson looks terrible and that the pictures were fraudulent. Ariel, always fun, man. Thanks for making time, and yes. Good luck to your Bills. I really do hope it happens.
Yes,
like, I really
go Bills.
Thank you. Go Bills. Let's go Buffalo. Wait, thank you guys. Appreciate it. All the best. Have a great weekend.
See you, man. Ariel Helwani, of all of the things MMA, you guys are just finding this out now, I guess, that he covers MMA, that he's an MMA figure. Follow him on Twitter.
No.
That's always
all.
Tough getting called out. I really did think he was going to break news, that rude guy. Like, I thought
he was going to
pull out of a fight
or
something.
Yeah, I was ready. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, there he is.
No, yeah, that's the new stinger for breaking news.
Yeah, Vic asked me earlier in the day to send him over my usual doc of UFC my UFC card breakdown that I've sent you in the past, JD. But the weigh-ins today, there, it's not just Figueiredo. There are a couple people that have a iffy weigh-in history. So as someone who would be in an iffy weigh-in spot myself right now, I want to wait for those because they do swing a bet. They do swing how you feel about a fight. That's a really exciting UFC 270 card tomorrow. What a weekend. Four NFL divisional round games, two Raptors games, a Leafs game, a UFC, a great aux cord from JD. Make sure you check out the socials at JD Bunkus, at Ailish4Far, and Blake Murphy for not only links to the podcast, links to the Spotify playlist of all the songs we play on the way in on Fridays as
correct.
Well. Yeah.
Correct.
It was a good one, JD.
This was a good week. This week felt good. I'm realizing that I should be rooting for the Bills so that we don't have Ailish in like a depression for like the full next week. Like it's like what's good for the show? Yes, what's good for the show is Bills win and having Ailish still be the vibes coordinator instead of just, you know, down
in the
dumps.
And need to hit one of those
Ailish.
Just five bucks bets. Like, just give me one. Just give me one.
What would you rather have?
Little bets.
What would you rather have? Tell the truth. Just $5. Like, go out of the park, pay your rent for the month, or the Bills win? Tell the truth.
The Bills win.
Oh.
The Bills.
She's fibbing.
But maybe they win on
today.
A just $5.
The worst poker face in the game. The worst poker face in the game. Ailish 4Far.
I'm going to put them in one of my crazy just $5 bets, and then if they win, then I'll be happy about everything. So,
well, may all your bets hit this weekend. You, Ailish, you, JD, all the listeners. It's been the Fan Morning Show. We'll talk to you guys on Monday. Sports at 590, The Fan.
Dun, 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 dun.